This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio in Amelia Island near Jacksonville. If you've not been here, this is a huge, huge place. I mean, the beach is right over there, but I have never seen it yet. When I come to these events, I work my butt off, probably like you, Cecil, right?
Go, go, go.
We're at the Institute's Summit 2025. WeAretheInstitute.com. Thank you to Cecil and Kent for having us here. The theme, stand out. And it's actually been the entire, everything that's happened here, all the keynoters, all the breakout sessions, and some of the best shop owner leaders ever. I'm so impressed with them. So thank you for this. A word from our sponsors. Hey, take your auto care center to the next level, the gold level, with the NAPA Auto Care Gold Certified Program. This program is for the best of the best who can provide a consistent consumer experience and earn the trust of returning and new customers. Talk to your NAPA sales representative about how you can become a gold certified shop. Hey, for over 30 years, NAPA Trax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the best, most comprehensive SMS in the industry. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Find NAPA Trax on the web at NAPATRACS.com. Hey, I'm back with Cecil Bullard, the CEO of the Institute. I saw your speech on the first day. You knocked it out of the park as usual. But I brought Cecil in here maybe to talk a little bit about the industry, but to find out a little bit more about him. What do you do for fun, Cecil?
Work.
I knew you were going to say that. Why did I know that?
I like woodworking. So building furniture, wood's interesting because it's not metal. And that's cool. Yeah. I love my family. So spending time with my grandkids. And my dad did not build relationships with his grandchildren. And I just thought that was really important. So I try hard to do that. You know, if I do what my wife wants, it's been certain shows. So every once in a while, I'm on the couch for
cool.
For a day watching whatever.
I love it. It seems like there's a decade or every decade, something kind of different happens with your life, your world. Here come the grandkids. Oh, it's a new fun, absolute thing I want to do. You know, last year was for me splitting wood.
Oh, wow.
Honest to God, we have burned more wood this year. Maybe we're going on our third cord than ever before. It's been a really cold winter. I have 7.5 acres of woods. We lost 20 ash trees because of the ash borer.
Yeah.
Last year, we had 10 taken down. I had the arborist take the bottom half, and I took the top, and I split all of it. And now I have another 10 or 15 that I have to do. And I can't wait for the snow to melt in Buffalo.
So you can do that.
Yes.
I always love what I call mindless work. I love to mow the lawns.
Yeah.
Right? Because I don't have to think about what I'm doing. I can think about all kinds of other things. But and when I'm done, I can look and go, wow, that looks really good. I mowed the lawn.
Instead of worrying about my next interview or the next edit or the next production or the next conference, I worry about not hurting my fingers.
Yeah, I think mindless work, what I would call mindless work like that, is extremely valuable. Yeah. Now, I don't know if my shoulders would handle splitting wood, but mowing the lawn, anything. I like to read too, by the way. I'm just an avid reader. I read between 3 and 4 books a week. Just
no kidding.
Yeah, for fun. So when I can't sleep, I'm reading.
If I read Focus Factor, Stolen Focus.
Yeah, actually, I think I'm about halfway through that one.
Me too.
I have about 4 books open now. Yeah. Right,
and that's a cool way. Zig Ziglar's son. I interviewed him a bunch of years ago. He's sitting on his couch. Barry Barrett made the introduction for me, and he was on with us. He's got a stack of books on his couch, and I asked him, and I said, "Why all the books?" He says, "To your point." He says, "I read so much. I kind of lose interest. I know I want to finish. I go to another one." And then I ask this great question. I says, "Do you read them all to the very end?" And he goes, "Hell no, Carm." He says, "If I think I got out of the book what I wanted 3/4 through, it's on my shelf."
I would say not only do I read them all to the end, but I might read them 3 or 4 times over time because it's like attending a class. You know, you get a good instructor and you go in and you're like, you come out and you're just pumped up. But you can't get it all, right?
Oh, no.
And you're right. So sometimes you got to read the book a second or a third time. And then the older I get, it's like, oh, I know. Where was that? I think it's one of the things that are going to keep me on my toes is just kind of keeping my head in it. Right?
I get it. Hey, get any advice over all the years that you still follow today?
So many wonderful people in my life, you know, so many mentors that have helped me. be where I need to be. I think that the advice that's probably been most valuable, and I don't even know that I could tell you who finally got it through my head, but it's like, I think believe in yourself and believe that the world is a good place and that whatever problems you're having, you're going to get through that and tomorrow's going to be a better day.
You watch the industry. What trends are you watching?
I think we got a lot of issues right now, obviously. Technology is changing the vehicles. So self-driving cars, they're going to be here at some point. And whoever owns the self-driving cars. So just had some conversations. One of the things about events like this, you get to talk to a lot of different people in the industry and you have companies that are trying to buy up the Ubers and the et cetera, because like Ford would love to buy Uber and then they get to sell Fords to all the Uber drivers. And then Ford controls where all the Ubers get fixed. And so I think right now the manufacturers, the issues with manufacturers struggling so hard in their service centers is driving them to think of other ways to control market. And one of the ways they're going to try to control market is to buy market share. So, and then you have millennials and what we got, Z-Gens. They don't necessarily want to own a car. So I think that you're going to see like lease a car for, you know, a self-driving car for $400 a month and it'll show up when you need it. And there's no driver and they're not going to own the car, which means that they don't control how the car gets taken care of, who takes care of it, et cetera. I think there's going to be some real challenges there for whoever may buy that and make that happen. But I think there's real opportunities. But I think that individual shops, I also see the separation of
specialists
and the mechanic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mechanical specialists, technology specialists.
No, I mean, we still have mechanics. We still have shops that are not educating. They're not training. I can get by just enough. I think we still have people that are pirating software instead of investing and training and looking at what's going to come up in the next 5 or 10 years that I need to know. And I think we're going to see a lot of shops close. You also have to think about BlackRock and the other two major private equity companies that own 87% of everything today, except for automotive.
Yeah.
They're coming in, like it or not.
Yeah.
And I think that with the advent in technology, with the changes, if you can't afford to pay your people well and run a really profitable business, that you're going to get out of the business, you're going to sell, you're going to have to. There's no way.
To your point, Wall Street Fortune, I've seen some articles come out in the absolute observation of what's going on in the service side of the business. Thank you for that. Any secrets to time suck? We just seem to sometimes mindlessly not pay attention.
It's funny because Kent was just diagnosed with ADHD. I've had it my entire life. And you have these strategies that you do. I have lists of things. And Kent has his lists and et cetera. What happens if you're not planning your time, then all of a sudden it's the end of the day. You didn't get done what you wanted to get done. So for me, one of my secrets is I keep a pad. I write things down. I make adjustments to that. There are things that fall off the list. And I think when you're teaching like the high energy ADHD or D type personality people that we have, you know, we want to be in charge. We want to take charge. We want to do everything, but you just can't. If you put the list together and then you go through the list and you say, should I be doing this? Right? Am I the only one that can do this in my company? And if I am, then I better find somebody else or teach somebody else. Is this something I really want to do? Is this something I hate to do? Is this something I should be passing on to someone else? When you start to create that and you create a list and then you're going through and saying, okay, I'm going to delegate those jobs and then I have to accept what happens. You know, you got a manager, but you need to become a coach for the manager. You can't just let the manager run loose. I would say it's the same thing when you're bringing someone along. And I think a lot of us in our business don't even bring them along. It's like, I'll just go do that. It's simpler. And then all of a sudden our days are gone. It's the whole week's gone and I didn't get done what I needed to get done this week.
Be more accountable to the things that you know you want to do. I mean, I'm a list guy just like you. And sometimes they move up, they move down.
Sometimes I pull them off.
And sometimes I actually get a chance to check it.
Yeah, if nobody noticed that I haven't done it in like 3 weeks, it disappears.
I guess it wasn't important, right?
Yeah.
What does stopping mean to you?
That's interesting. I think that's Murray's comment. But to me, it means we hold ourselves up because we limit ourselves. Okay. And so I don't want to limit my company. I don't want to limit my people. I don't want to limit myself. And so there are things you should stop. If you're consciously determining your life and your business, making those conscious decisions, which means you have to stop in the morning every day and go, I need 15 minutes to go through my list. And that's a valid stop. Yeah, yeah. But if you're allowing everything else to get in your way, then why are you? If that thing that's on your list is that important, why are you stopping yourself?
Yeah.
What's holding you back?
Those are the words I was just thinking of.
I think you really need to say, okay, why am I not doing this, or what's holding me back? We, as humans, we do this weird thing where if we don't understand something, or if it's really tough for us, we don't have a lot of experience in it, we distract ourselves. And to me, stopping is stop distracting yourself, mm-hmm. right?
Perfect, yeah. It's the right answer.
Yeah, are you going to get it done or not? Yeah, because if that's not something that is of that kind of value to you, then get it off your list or give it to somebody else.
I think it's a great two words for people to realize, I'm not getting anything done.
Yeah.
Well, stop.
Yeah.
Basically, stop stopping. You have a decision to make. Okay. I should have done that last week. So stop stopping.
And I think you have to, I don't know, you know, your beautiful daughter works for you.
Yeah.
Works with you. My son works with me.
Yeah.
And I'm the D personality. I'm the guy that's like the driver who thinks I should do it. I can do it faster. I can do it better.
Is Kent a D? Is Kent a D?
He says he is.
Okay.
But he's got really strong C in him.
He does.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So if he is a DC, which is probably his personality, around me, he's more C than D. Right. Around some of the rest of the staff, he's probably more D than C. So, but I'm the guy that's like, oh my God, I have to do this because I'm the one that's going to do it the best I know the most. You can't do that because if you do that, they're not going to have any opportunity.
Yeah.
The rest of the staff isn't going to have opportunity.
To your point, we're talking about the DISC profile, dominance, influence,
interpersonal,
interpersonal, S being kind of a steady as she goes, the customer service person, and the C being a conformist, meaning the accountant style in all of us.
Yeah.
A has to go before B.
Controller.
Yeah, C. Exactly right. Oh, one day, let me tell you the story about me losing my
never your mind
on a high C.
Yeah.
I'm an ID, okay? D and I are above the line.
Yeah.
And everything else is below. I won't go into that, but my point was, if we knew what our people's communication style was, our DISC, we end up ultimately having the right kind of conversation with them. Because if you're a D going to talk to an I, they're probably not going to listen unless you have their conversation with them, not yours.
If you're a salesperson and you have a lot of experience being a salesperson, you know that you have to make adjustments for the people you're talking to.
Yeah.
And if you're a good manager, it's the same thing. If I'm going to be Cecil the D and have a good conversation, especially when Kent is like in his total C role, there's no way we're even going to talk. We're just going to get mad at each other. We're both going to think, well, you're not listening to me. And then we end up either yelling at each other or not talking to each other for 3 days, which none of that solves the problem.
Yeah.
And I think there's, who's the adult in the situation? I know it's probably the wrong way to put it, but if you're the adult in the situation, you say, okay, I'm going to get more out of this person or out of this communication if I make the adjustment to the other person's style.
EVs and other high voltage vehicles are changing the automotive landscape. Is your shop ready? With more than 16% of these light-duty vehicles on the road, you will have many opportunities to service them, but you must do safely and properly. Get your shop trained and equipped to service hybrid and EV vehicles with NAPA AutoTech's innovative EV-ready Level 1 high-voltage awareness and maintenance training. This four-day program is held in a fully functioning EV repair facility with all the latest high-tech equipment and technology needed to train your technicians to go from an EV maintenance tech to an EV battery service tech after completing the entire program. This four-day program is held in a fully functioning EV repair facility with all the latest high-tech equipment and technology needed to train your technicians to go from an EV maintenance tech to an EV battery service tech after completing the entire program. Each topic starts with intensive classroom training followed by in-depth hands-on practice, and students are tested on the knowledge they gained in the classroom. Technicians will learn on various hybrid and EV vehicles such as Tesla, Toyota, GM, Ford, Hyundai, and Nissan. This will allow them to make educated decisions on equipment needed in their own shop to perform repairs. This course is on site at the Napa Automotive Research Center in Canton, Ohio. Attendance requires ASE 6 certification, EPA ASE 609 certification, and at least 5 years of shop experience. The total cost is only $4,000 per attendee, which includes the 4-day course, hotel, breakfast, lunch, and the PPE needed to perform the services. Now, if you're a gold certified auto care, you can use your gold marketing funds to offset the cost. Hey, don't miss out on this invaluable opportunity to advance your team skills and ensure your shop is EV ready. Contact the Napa Training Service Center at 800-292-6428 to secure your spot. Let's face it, your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. Napa Trax was built from the ground up to make your business more profitable and efficient. We provide an extensive set of tools to increase and track profitability in real time. Napa Trax offers the industry's best post-sale support, hands down, and we train your people on site. Yep, on site. And we offer remote refresher training 10 times a week, and customer support is open 6 days a week. Give us a call, visit the website, or join our Facebook community today to learn more. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Napa Trax is always customized and tailored for you, whether you're a one-man shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Visit us on the web at NapaTrax, that's NapaTrax.com.
I've got thermal management shops. I've got EV shops. I've got ADAS calibration shops.
Well, I would tell you, I think, first of all, ADAS is going to change with technology. It's going to become simpler for the average shop to do.
The calibration.
And so these guys that really invested a lot of money in the big facility and all that, I think that's going to change. Electric vehicles, it's not the technology of the future. It's going to be a hybrid of some sort. It might be gas electric, or it might be gas hydrogen, or diesel hydrogen, or whatever. Yeah. And we're going to have multiple options, because that's really the future of it all. You know, specialty shops, I thought we would be almost all specialty shops by now. I mean, you know, 20 years ago, I was like, oh, we're going to have the BMW shops because the equipment's getting so expensive, and you got to have specialty training for all of that. And we certainly, I think, have more of it now. But I don't know that the generalist is ever going to go away, because it solves a problem for a certain part of the population.
Because, and why I semi-agree with you, is that in my house, I've got one of each.
Yeah.
And why do I want to have four or three different relationships out there?
No, and it's harder. It's like, okay, if I trust Cecil, or if I trust Carm, that's where I want to go.
That's where I want to go.
Right.
You're my place.
And so, hey, Carm, I know you work on my whatever, but can you work on my whatever? And the answer is, yeah, if I can make it work, if I can make it pay, then yeah, I'm going to do it for you. I don't want you going anywhere else. Are you kidding? There's a little part of me that's like, oh, he might really like them better than me.
You mentioned Blackstone earlier, private equity. I mean, the consultant, I mean, you got your finger on the pulse of this. I know you do.
Yeah.
With Michael Smith joining your group, chief strategy officer, I think, something like that. He's become a great friend of ours, and we love to hear him talk.
We like him.
Yeah. Just sit back in the room with Michael, and you know, you'll get like a million words coming at you.
Yeah.
You know.
Imagine, it's hard for me to talk when Michael's involved. Cecil Bullard has a hard time getting in the conversation.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I just spoke to him before you. I did pretty good, I think.
Did you?
Okay. I think I held my own. You'd be proud.
Yay. I can't wait to hear it. I love Michael to pieces. I mean, if you get to know that guy, he has got a heart the size of China.
Oh, my God.
And he cares, and he is so freaking smart. I mean,
he's wicked smart.
Yeah.
That's what they say, right? Wicked. Yeah. He's wicked smart.
Wicked smart.
Wicked smart.
And, but I keep telling him, man, you got to slow down a little for the rest of us, you know, just for the rest of us.
Oh, my God.
Just a little.
I will feel comfortable saying that to him.
Yeah.
Because I want to hear everything he has to say.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, like what I do for a living, it's a two-way.
And it has to be.
It's got to be a two-way. This whole Blackstone thing, consolidation, and you're close to it. There's so much talk about it. I mean, think out 5 years for me and tell me where you think it's headed.
Eventually, especially with like self-driving cars, if companies like Ford end up being the provider for the self-driving cars and the, whatever Uber is going to
be. And they steal that car park.
Yeah.
We're going to have a hurt, a little bit of a hurt.
And by the way, if private equity wants to come into our industry, we're not going to keep them out. Right. Okay. Whether we like it or not. And, you know, if you and I go back, say, when we met 8 years ago.
Yeah.
How many private equity companies did you know of?
I knew of zero.
I knew of maybe two or three.
Yeah.
Currently, I can tell you that there are probably 9 or 10 in the industry right now actively pursuing.
Hovering.
And there's 5 or 6 more coming in because I get stuff every day. You're Cecil Bullard. You're the Institute. We want you on our board. We're a private equity company. We're going to come in and consolidate and, you know, pay you a bunch of money, blah, blah, blah. And so I think we're going to see a consolidation of the industry, whether you like it or not, which there's really good news about that and bad news. So
I think one of the words is opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. Because right now the average shop goes at about 2.8x EBITDA. So if I made 100,000, I can sell for 280,000 plus assets.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But my assets are only worth 20 cents on the dollar. So my old equipment, 20 cents on the dollar, my cars, 20 cents on the dollar, et cetera.
Yeah.
And my computers and other stuff here, they're not worth anything. And the tools are really not worth anything, maybe 10 cents on the dollar.
Isn't that the toughest part for any shop owner to have to overcome? You know, wait a minute.
Do you know how much my toolbox? I had a $200,000 toolbox.
Yeah. And you want to pay me $1,000 for it?
Yeah.
And how about that? 5 years ago, I just bought that Road Force balancer.
When I finally realized I wasn't going to work on cars anymore at all, I gave my tools to a friend who has a shop that needed the tools because I'd rather do that than try to sell them because nobody wanted to pay me. It pissed me off every time I talk to somebody. They call you and they're like, oh, yeah, you got this? It's a, I don't know, $500 wrench set that I might pay for Snap-on. And they're like, oh, I'll give you $15 for it. And it just was like, I'd rather take them all and dump them in the ocean than do that. So I give my toolboxes away. I gave all my tools away. I mean, I have enough now that like if I need a wrench or something like that, I have it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't worry about that at this point.
The best assets that any shop owner has to sell is property with the building on it if he owns it.
And so 2.8, I just testified in a court case last week. I got another one next week about the value of shops and
2.8 is the multiple on top of the EBITDA.
Just yeah, that's average.
A lot of people.
Average at the moment.
A lot of people don't know that. But go ahead,
But with private equity coming in, the value of a well-run shop. Now, by the way, the multiple,
let's say higher,
3 years ago, would have been between 1 and 4.
Okay.
So the best run shop in the world where the owner's not involved and there's a manager and the business has been growing for 3 years and it's net 15% plus and no bad check marks. 4x EBITDA, right?
Yeah.
And so, but average 2.8.
Yeah.
Well, now with private equity coming in, some of the private equity companies have kind of learned their lesson because the first guys that came in, they went to buy crappy shops because they didn't have to pay for them, right? So I could buy it at a 1x. I could buy that shop for 100 grand or I can buy that shop for 200 grand and the owner will carry 150 of it.
And they got nothing.
Right. And then they bought a bunch of crap and then it was crap. And now they've learned their lesson and they're coming in. They're saying, I don't want a crappy shop. I want a shop that runs well and that is organized well, et cetera. And that's kind of what Michael is kind of doing in our company is trying to get that, be the evangelist for that word out there.
I love that word.
But now you can get 5X. And I even know some guys getting 6X for a shop that's well run because private equity wants the business. And if you've got a 20% net in your shop and you've done that 3 years in a row and you're not the player and et cetera, and you're checking all the boxes, I could get a 5 or 6X for a single shop that maybe net 300 grand.
Yeah.
So now I have $1.5 million instead of 700,000.
Right.
I've almost doubled what I have, but there's another part of it too. If we go and put together a bunch of those shops, like guys that have 2 and 3 or 5 and 7, and we put them into a platform that we then present, we can get 10, 12X.
Yeah, exactly.
So the opportunity is amazing right now. And I think, hang on, I got to say it. There's a bunch of shop owners, when they hear M&A or they hear private equity, they're like, well, those rotten SOBs. You know, they are. I'm sorry. All they care about is money, but they're coming in our industry. They're coming in our industry hard. And you need to be running a good shop because it will give you opportunity either way, yeah. whether you keep it, pass it on to family, or whether you decide to sell it to private equity. And I guarantee you what's gone on in the auto body industry.
Oh, yeah.
We're 12 years behind them, mm-hmm. and private equity is much more aggressive right now than they've ever been in our industry,
right.
or they ever were in auto body. And this is going to happen relatively fast. They'll still be mom and pop. They'll still be well-run shops, but we're going to be dealing with private equity in something. And one of the things that private equity is doing a little different is they're not changing the name of all the shops. So now it's still John's Automotive, and they're still running it under John's Automotive, but it's no longer owned by John. It's owned by
right.
the private equity company.
The brand was strong. The people were great. The owner could walk away and it'll run.
Yeah, it gives us opportunities financially. If you're getting in your, you know, late 50s, 60s, and you're like, I want out, holy smokes, what a better opportunity than being able to double the what I get out of the shop.
Yeah. Your words are so strong. And one of my favorite bits of advice that I ever got in my life was the words, pay attention.
Yeah.
And is so if an owner is not paying attention to their net operating income, I'm sorry, all of that means you've got to do all 30 of those things way up in the umbrella, right? And if this company can run with your minimalist involvement, and it's scary to think, but some of the people that I know received and are still working and are still growing in a multiple for their business. And then I was lucky enough to be with you guys in a particular meeting a few years ago and see how you can maybe even get a second payday out of this stuff.
Yeah, we got guys that are coming up to their second payday.
Wow. Okay. So what does that all that mean? Well, run a great shop, hook up with Michael and Cecil and figure it out.
We have too many people in our industry, and God bless them, who don't really understand your business is an engine. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And if the engine gets air and fuel at the right amount at the right time, under the right compression and spark at the right time, it runs like a bat out of hell. If any of those things are off, then it doesn't give you the performance that you want. And we need every shop owner to understand how the engine works and what, how much air and how much fuel and all of that. Because when you figure that out, not only does it run better and it manages better and you can take care of yourself and your family better, but you can also take care of the families and the people that work for you and create a lot more opportunity, not just for yourself, but for them also.
Thanks for the motivation on this. We've done so many episodes. We've discussed ad nauseum on this. And I like to often bring this up because there's always a new opportunity, a new open mind is set that comes from some stubborn, stuck people and a lot of new people that constantly are listening to the show. So where am I going one day? Honey, I'm going to sell this for $1 million one day. And then they find out that it's not possible because they didn't run like a well-oiled engine.
So there's a guy that you and I can, if I said the name, you would know exactly who it is. And currently he owns either 5 or 6 shops, been growing. But I knew him 15 years ago when he was a tech coming into a shop that was going to be sold. Okay. And they made a 7-year deal, him and the owner. And 7 years go by. The owner wants to sell the shop, but what he needs is way more than the shop is worth. Okay. And they never tightened the deal down. They never actually wrote anything down. They never put stuff on paper. So all of a sudden, this guy has put 7 years into this business. And now the owner is coming and saying, well, I'm not going to sell it to you for that. I'm going to sell it to you. It has to be this. And it's only, it has to be this because he's not okay if he doesn't get that.
Right.
And, you know, he comes to me and he goes, what do I do? And I said, well, right. First of all, neither one of them should have been at that point. We should have put a plan together 7 years ago to make it look like, and what does it need to look like so the owner can get out the way the owner needs to and the guy can come in the way the guy comes in. But okay. We ended up paying an extra $100,000 for it. And, you know, I was like, it's worth more because we know we can run it better. So give him an extra $100,000. It's the only way you're going to get it. And you've already invested 7 years of your life. And now he has, I don't know, six shops or whatever. He's doing fantastically. But it's that I don't want to come to the point of I got to sell my shop, but I'm not going to have what I need to feel comfortable in my retirement.
Absolutely. Okay? That's the problem.
You never want to be there. And we've also done other deals with other guys who, like, there's another guy that if I mention his name, you know who it was. And their service advisor, service manager, I think they at the time had two locations. We put a 7-year plan together where 7 years from now, if you've grown the business to six locations or whatever, then you get 30% of it and you get to buy out the rest. And the owner's going, well, why would I give up 30%? Well, because it's not a small pie anymore. It's a much bigger pie. So your 70% is a larger pie, right? And it worked out great. The plan was done. They've now gone through that part of it. And don't let your life come to the point where you're at that point and you don't know what you're going to do because you haven't figured it out.
Ross Bernstein, today.
Yeah.
Pick up the phone and call somebody. Duh. You see, all these people that are stuck, I need this, I got to have that. They don't know what they don't know. And they continue to walk down the aisle, not having a clue. The P&L looks different. The assets are stronger. The business has grown. And to your point, my 70% is even worth more.
I have a coach. I have mentors, that people that both work with me and around me that I use all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm the guy that's supposed to know everything. I don't.
And that's why. And that's how you know it.
Yeah.
Hey, if you could pick up an instant skill right now, tomorrow, says God, bless me with a new skill, what would it be?
Patience.
Well, that came right away.
Although I make a joke all the time. I have not learned patience. So if I'm at the grocery store and I'm in that line where I'm always in that line, I'm like, oh, God's trying to teach me patience and I haven't learned it. If I'm at the, I don't know if I'm checking into the hotel and it ain't going the way I want, I'm like, God's trying to teach me patience. I haven't learned it. And I make this joke about I need to not learn patience, because if I do, then I've got everything I'm supposed to, and then God's going to pull me from the earth. So I want to be here a while longer, so I'm not going to learn patience yet.
We all have a dark side.
Kind of a joke. I think the slowing down a little bit and trusting with management, the people around you, mm-hmm. can really change the game. I've had to do that in the Institute in order to grow the Institute. I've realized that my lack of skills in certain areas will hold it back if I don't use other people and allow other people to have some freedom to do what needs to be done.
Those early decisions, were they painful?
Oh, are you kidding me? I'm still paying for many of the early decisions, okay, right?
Yeah.
Because I made them without enough information, or because I was too forceful.
Was it impulse?
Whatever.
Impulse?
Oh, I think I'm extremely impulsive. Okay. Obviously, with the depersonality, you're like, oh, I don't need any information. Yeah, I can do that. Let's go. I would tell you right now, if you ask Kent, you know, what's the worst thing about your dad? He's like, oh, there's a hill. Let's go take it. Doesn't look back and see how much ammo, how many people are following. Yeah. You know, what's the path? Kent wants to plan it out.
So patience. If you could send a message to yourself, your younger you, just to say 15 years ago, what would you say to the younger Cecil?
I would say it's going to be fine.
Wow.
Okay. Just because everything that happens, like you have this thing that happens and I shattered my ankle. I spent 2 years in a wheelchair, 7 surgeries. And during that time, it was the end of my life. Okay. But because of that, I was able to go back to college, get a couple of degrees. I now have the Institute. It's going to be fine. You know, if it doesn't kill you, it's going to be fine, right? If I had calmed down sooner and been a little more patient, I think that I would live a lot longer and have a much happier existence. Even today, now when something happens that's like, you know, my first reaction is like, I want to kill somebody or, you know, whatever. I'm like, okay, take a couple of deep breaths and it's not the end of the world.
No.
We'll make it through there, right?
You had all the money in the world. Gold piled in rooms at the house. What would you buy?
I would buy security for my family, children. I don't need anything else. If I'm not rich, but I am wealthy enough at the point that if I need something, I can go buy it.
Got it.
Why would I want $25 million? Well, okay, that might buy security for my family in Fenidum, but also we're finding out that you know, third generation wealth destroys people, frankly.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't need a boat. I don't need a motorcycle. I don't, you know, if I need a new pair of Levi's, I'll go get a new pair of Levi's. More time? But you can't do that, right?
No.
That's the one thing, right?
You can't buy time.
You kind of can if you're smart. You're putting people in place. It might cost you money.
No,
but you're putting people in place to do the things that you don't want to do, right?
Yeah.
So in a way, you can maybe buy time, but it's not more time than you have on the earth anyway, right?
I have one more question. I so loved this off-the-charts, candid Cecil Bullard thing. Thank you for coming in here at the Institute Summit 2025. One thing that you've done and no one knows.
I always think of the bad stuff, so we're not going to talk about that.
Whoa. No. No.
Oh, dude.
Never.
You know, we all have our warts, and we don't want anybody to see them, and that's fine. I'm a pretty open book. I love my family. I love the industry. I've gotten lots of calls from people that have said, hey, Cecil, someone needs help, or, you know, and I almost hate to say this here because then all of a sudden I'm going to get a bunch of emails, but I'll give up an hour for anybody in this industry that wants to talk and how can I help you and what direction can I give you? We tried a program a couple years ago where we brought in 6 or 8 shops.
I remember that.
No pay.
Yeah.
Most of those shops wouldn't even make their meetings with me.
Yeah.
And so we killed that because
there was no value to it.
There has to be an investment on their part.
Yeah.
But I routinely, if someone calls me and they're like, oh, I really need help, I'm like, okay, well, if you do these couple of things, you're going to be in good shape. And I don't know. I mean, what nobody knows, I'm a pretty open book. I almost played college basketball.
Oh, so you know, that's cool.
I had a 10-inch afro in high school.
No.
Oh, I had the best afro in
high
school.
Well, wait a minute. That's the best piece of knowledge right there.
Oh, I got a picture I got to show you.
Would you do that?
Yeah, with the 10-inch afro. And I only weighed like 165 pounds. I was 6'4".
6'4" with a 10-inch afro. That puts you at 7 what?
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was beautiful.
Oh my God, Cecil. I must see that.
I also had a ponytail and a mullet at different times. So, yeah.
I want a ponytail.
I think a ponytail like with the white hair and everything. Great.
I've seen guys with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. My wife wants me to grow a ponytail.
I don't have the patience for it. So
no, I tried.
Probably won't happen, but
I tried a few years ago.
Yeah.
Is my hair continuing to grow? Cecil, it didn't get long.
It just kept getting more and more bushy. You were going to have an afro.
Yeah, I know. It was getting so bushy that when I put on a hat, it would all just stream out. But it wasn't long enough to put any kind of tail anywhere.
Yeah. No, I probably had about an eight inch ponytail at the time. And
damn.
Then I got rid of it.
All right.
Long time ago when the kids were small.
Completely different view of you.
Yeah. And the other thing is that you probably don't know is that I'm not supposed to be in the automotive industry. This is never where I was supposed to be. My dad didn't want me here. I didn't want to be here.
Yeah.
I ended up here. And there was a point in time where I decided, wherever I'm going to be, I'm going to try to be the best I can be. And I think everybody needs to make that decision, even if you're only going to be there for a year, because you might find that it's 44 years later and you're still there.
Well, it's good that you're here. You're changing a lot of people's lives. I've got so many friends that are part of your group and they have done incredible things with their business. And it really all flows down to some of the great people you've hired, the decisions that you've made. And
watch,
the commitment you have to advance this industry.
Watch for a couple announcements in the next 2 months.
Ooh. Oh, can't wait. Excited. Cecil Bullard, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.